Mary, 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 as his life must be.
Laugh, kookaburra, laugh, kookaburra, save the best for me.
There's your duet for song. Today.
Welcome to the Screams and Dream Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Allison.
I'm Melissa.
And I'm Chelsea.
So if you're joining us for the first time with this podcast, you'll hear us discuss all the scary, spooky, unexplainable things. And today, keeping up with our rotation of topics, today is a dream topic. And we are going to be discuss daydreams. As a reminder, we are still collecting content for our first Sunday Scaries episode. So we want to hear from you, the listeners, to talk about your nightmares, weird dreams, bumps in the night, anything really. And you can write to us at screamdreampod@gmail.com or send us a message through our Instagram at screamdreampod.
And we also have our fourth host, Mary. If you're curious about what little Mary looks like, check her out on our social media. And she's no longer living with me. She's been spirited away.
She's with me. And Mary has taken residence on my bookshelf beside some beautiful, I think it's a chunk of selenite. Her butt is over Water for Elephants, My Year of Meats.
You should have put her on your Stephen King shelf.
He's smattered throughout the entire house. We don't want to just contain him in one area. So Mary's been doing well. She seems to be happy that she's high enough to not be grabbed by little hands just yet.
Or eaten by a dog
or peed on by a cat. We just don't know what day it's going to be.
I did sew her arm back on.
I noticed that. That was the first thing I checked.
She'll be back. She'll be back one day.
She's a traveling lady. So what has made you scream or dream this week? Mel, I see you are at the ready with a beautiful dream journal.
Yeah, I wonder who got it for me.
I don't know, probably somebody special. Do you have anything that you would like to report out on?
Okay, well, I did a terrible job. I had great dreams again, and I only documented one.
One is better than none, my friend.
Holla. So, May 20th, this is when it happened. So I'm at work in an open space setup and I'm doing some work and realize my monitors have been switched out. And I all of a sudden realize both are much smaller and older monitors. So stupid.
What a nightmare.
So one is like a point of sales style setup and I'm super frustrated. One's like an old school like DOS computer screen, just like the black screen and the green text. So I'm really frustrated because I'm like, what the heck? Like, who switched out my monitors? And like, I can't get my work done because one's like a point of sale machine like screen and one's like from the 80s. So I go to my boss and he said that my screens were being loaned out for 5 days to a consultant. Oh, and I was like, but I have those special monitors because I scratched my cornea 10 years ago.
Oh my God.
And which is true. I actually do have special monitors at work. This is true, but it comes into my dream. And I was like, so I can't just use any monitor. I can't see properly with them. And I totally forgot about this dream. It's so dumb. And so I'm more upset than I've ever been. Then all of a sudden, like, the doors open and like strange men just like come and like they're like swag and like super chill and they just come into the office and they're hanging out and like, what the hell is going on? Then later on in my dreamscape, I'm in like a subway tunnel and the stop is to stay within the subway tunnel, but it opens up into a room that's like a movie theater. So I'm in there and I fall asleep during the movie and I'm sitting beside somebody who brought their baby and the baby's like not an issue. It's just like actually like a really cute baby and we're all hanging out together, but I get tired and I fall asleep during the movie because it's like a midnight show. And then I wake up and I can't find my running shoes that I wore into the theater. And then the theater turns into this university style lecture hall. So weird. Anyways, That's all I got. It's pretty weak, but monitors and movie theaters.
Wow. No murder in there.
No murder. Although I have had some of those dreams again. I just, they fell out of my brain as soon as I woke up.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Chelsea?
No, I haven't had any dreams that I remember for a couple weeks.
Allison?
I've had some crazy dreams.
Not just messy floors anymore?
No. Right now, I think I'm stuck on sand and bicycles as a theme, which is just recurring. I don't know why, but that's not the dream that I'm going to talk about. But I dreamt of seeing, I was in a bank, and I watched a manager completely freak out at one of his employees. And when I say freak out, I mean swearing, screaming, flailing his arms, just absolutely over the top reacting. And so, you know, the manager of the bank was yelling, screaming, and he was dragging the employee out of the office. And so he was screaming at this poor teller for making a mistake. And, you know, one of the clients had come up to say, I didn't get all of my money. I really need my money. I need to pay for something that's really important to me. And the poor employee was like, I'm sorry. This is how I was taught to do things. I'm really sorry. And so the client followed them, and I eventually was able to separate them. But then somebody hit the client in the back of the head with an anchor.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, I don't know, like for whatever reason, it was just this gross gash in the back of the head. I took the manager inside, and I had to walk back through like a training room where people were practicing their, I don't know, their bank telling skills or whatever. But I sat the client down and I was like, manager, you have to come with me. And I took them to a separate room. And then I was asking a whole bunch of people for witnesses. I was like, you need to tell me what happened. I need you to stay in the room. Don't leave. And as I'm walking the manager out, he's like, I can't believe that guy made a mistake. And I was like, all right, you need to now calm down. I need you to calm down right now because the police have been called. He was likely going to be in trouble. And he's like, I'm going to get fired. Like, yeah, almost likely that you are. Sit down in this room, and the detective showed up. And they're like, okay, we need to start talking to the witnesses, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no problem. And when I went back up to the training room, everyone had dispersed into their training classes and were doing role playing as if nothing had happened. And I was like, you guys, what did you see? And they're like, well, we can't really talk right now. We're in the middle of training. So we're going to have to wait until the end of the day because our boss won't let us leave until we've done this training. And so towards the end of the dream, the manager came back and he was like, should I say I'm sorry to that guy? And I'm like, no, he needs medical attention and you're going to get sued and fired. And then the police came to arrest him and then I woke up.
That is bizarre.
So I have no idea what that means.
I don't know either.
Like, where did the anchor come from? A rooftop?
Look up anchor.
Says, to dream of an anchor represents immovability or staying put on an issue. Alternatively, an anchor could represent a person or situation that is always dependable or stable. Negatively, an anchor may reflect a stubborn attitude or unwillingness to keep confronting a problem. It may also reflect feelings of being stuck with a situation, feeling held back by someone else that refuses to confront problems or move on, feeling shackled to a relationship that isn't working, feeling tied to an emotional problem.
Hmm.
That makes more sense.
I don't know how to dissect either one of those.
All right, so we are talking about daydream, and we all have daydreamed. I'm a pretty big daydreamer. I can definitely get out of my head pretty easily and into my thoughts.
Same here.
So we thought we would look at it in a bit more detail and what it means to daydream, what's going on in your brain, some benefits of daydreaming, some considerations for daydreaming, and we're going to go through some fun pop culture. So it's not too scary, but it is dreamy. So here we go. Technically, daydreaming is where a person shifts their stream of consciousness that detaches from current external tasks when attention drifts to a more personal and internal direction. That's a lovely definition, by the way.
Beautiful, right?
Yeah. So like maybe you're sitting in your classroom, staring ahead at the person that you secretly admire, thinking about a walk in the park, or getting cast as co-leads. Oh my God, I always envision this in my day. Or getting cast as co-leads in the school play together, or getting asked out of the big dance by them, if you're into that. Things are weightless, wonderful, and there's a warm and fuzzy feeling as you stare out the window as you play all these wonderful scenarios out in your mind. Then your teacher calls you for the third time to answer a question, and you realize that you haven't been paying attention at all. Maybe you're sitting in front of your computer at work with really good monitors, befuddled with a problem to solve. At the moment, you don't have an immediate answer or solution. You take a break from work and visualize what success looks like. And all of a sudden, you've conjured up solutions in your brain simply because you've had the time to do some creative thinking. Maybe you're stepping up to the microphone in a stadium filled with thousands of people dying to hear you sing your set while you rock a Swarovski-studded unitard.
Unitard. Woo!
With fringes hanging off the sleeves, you begin to sing, and the audience starts to thunder with excitement, even though you couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. So have you ever driven to and from a place and there was a gap in the middle because you were thinking about something else? God, I do this all the time.
That happens all the time and it scares me.
I know, it's terrifying. But this really is because your brain can work under two streams of consciousness, which proves how complex the human brain can be. One, thinking about the daydream, and the other, navigating street signs, road conditions, and operating a motor vehicle.
Isn't that wild? Crazy.
That does make me feel so a bit crazy. Better.
Yeah, the human brain can actually operate in two different ways. So one side is interpreting your dream and you're off into space. The other one is paying attention to signs and streetlights. Yes. Rub your belly, tap your head. Exactly, Mel.
Oh my gosh. So the fact that humans have an internal amusement entertainment capability is pretty amazing. Our minds and imaginations are limitless, but as with anything else in life, moderation is key. According to medical experts today, experts believe that daydreaming could be the product of a collection of brain regions known as the default mode network.
So sciencey.
Well, the pod doc is back.
Pod doc Mel in the house.
Here we go. You ready for it? The for default sure. mode network is in a part of the brain's cortex that demonstrates consistent activity patterns when the brain is otherwise in a state of rest. So in other words, brain activity in this network is at its highest when the brain is not attending to a task. Activity levels in the default mode network fall if the brain starts to pay attention to an external task or object. So it's like you're on autopilot.
Yeah.
Many people spend their time in their daydreams. Almost everyone does. Usually people daydream about playing past memories and experiences, which could be good or bad. Thinking about the outcome of a task they need to do, things they enjoy, or future scenarios. So there is a time when daydreaming can be useful and productive, but other times it can cause a loss of focus and can distract from important tasks. Head in the clouds. So daydreaming can interfere with productivity and slow it down or stop completely. So for example, operating heavy machinery or driving daydreaming can even be dangerous to the dreamers and others. I hope somebody operating heavy machinery, like, or just, you know, flying a plane, is not daydreaming. So the impacts of daydreams are not always the same. Some are very disruptive, while some can be favoring or helpful. Others can be troublesome. So there's many types of daydreams, and there's no consistent definition among psychologists. However, the characteristic that is common to all forms of daydreaming meets the criteria for mild dissociation. And don't worry, Pod Doc Mel's here for you. Because for those of you who don't know, dissociation is the process which a person mentally disconnects from their thoughts, feelings, memories, or sense of identity. It can include amnesia, dissociative depersonalization disorder, and dissociative identity disorder. Oh, this is bringing me back to all of my psych classes.
Well, let's talk about some of the benefits
of
daydreaming, shall we? For the purposes of this section, we will turn to our good friend Merriam-Webster, who defines daydreaming as a pleasant, visionary, usually wishful creation of the imagination. Different parts of your brain have the opportunity to be stimulated. The two main parts of our brain consist of an analytic part and an empathetic part. When you focus too much on one, the other does not get enough stimulation. And daydreaming allows for some mental gymnastics where both sides get some recreational time. Improved health has also been suggested as a side effect of daydreaming. Some research indicates that daydreaming is akin to a low-level self-hypnosis and may help reduce levels of stress. Have you ever had a presentation where you were mentally preparing for it? Does help.
Also, I feel like there's like a lot of meditation overlap too.
Mm-hmm.
In how what daydreaming can elicit as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it gives you like the flexibility to actually have I think everyone should have a dress rehearsal if you've got a big event, bigger presentation. Mm-hmm. Certainly imagine it going the best that it can, but it's also going to help you mentally prepare for other curveballs that come your way. But definitely practicing, I think, and pretending that the audience is there is really helpful.
One hundo.
So daydreaming can also help you sleep better, apparently. Let your nightly mind wander to playful, wild places instead. Ooh.
Ooh. Capacity.
So, Freud, a known father to modern-day psychoanalysis, regarded daydreamers as infantile in their thinking. And Freud,
whatever, Sig.
And Freud believed that daydreaming was a way for people to resolve any conflict that they might be facing, and that the person's fantasy might be a mix of their desires and what is socially acceptable according to societal standards.
Hmm.
So, some people use daydreaming as a way to deal with conflict resolution. And it's also known as organized daydreaming and involves visualizations of different ways to deal with conflicts or problems that people are dealing with in maybe their work life, home life. So daydreaming can help you understand other people or at least imagine or acknowledge someone else's viewpoint. When we did our research, when Allison did our research, we found that there is a lot of time spent daydreaming, and if we could focus some of that time into thinking about other people's perspectives, then interactions could change and create opportunities for improved connection. This method of daydreaming helps review specific situations to be prepared for a variety of outcomes. Using organized daydreaming can help to visualize several different possible scenarios to better prepare. A good daydream may help you to come back to a task and finish it off with renewed energy, or sometimes we just get bored and distracted with boring, monotonous tasks. Allowing a few minutes to daydream creative ways to solve a problem might give you some inspiration to give you that great idea to shepherd something to a conclusion or simply boost your creativity. Especially during these times, daydreaming about spending time with friends and family that you aren't able to be together with can give you positive feelings and can often help you feel like you're still together. We're not saying that daydreaming is the same as being with your people, whoever they may be. It can help keep you thinking about them and keep them close to your heart.
Aww.
Though daydreaming can be harmful when it happens too much. We're going to get into the scary soon, don't worry. It's Allison. Allison's bringing the bad.
Bringing the spook on.
Yeah, so like Chelsea said, daydreaming can be harmful if it happens too much. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. So, you know, while most of us are thinking that daydreaming is voluntary and we go to wonderful places, not all daydreams are good. So many people daydream about fantasies and other desirable events. Others might be daydreaming about doing something harmful to themselves or to others. And I think it's important also just to note that the ego and the id come into play here. So there are thoughts that happen, but it's certainly our ego that keeps us in check into not actually acting out on those bad behaviors. But sometimes these daydreams will be rather involved with a great level of detail. And for some people, they're worst case scenarios and they almost form a plan rather than a fantasy. When it involves something that could cause harm, daydreaming is likely to be a detrimental quality. And we're going to talk about something that is actually a fairly new science or a new study, and that's called maladaptive, in brackets, bad daydreaming. So what starts to happen when daydreaming starts to take over? And you would rather spend more of your day in your daydreams rather than reality itself. The technical form of daydreaming that interrupts day-to-day functioning is called maladaptive daydreaming. It's a condition where a person starts daydreaming excessively. They're able to daydream to the extent where they are fully present in daydreams that present as elaborate and fantastical worlds. It's not simply mind wandering. It happens for a few minutes. It's an intentional act where people actually make the conscious effort to go into their daydreams and stay there. And like I mentioned before, the full disclosure, this is an absolutely new study, relatively speaking. So there's an absence of information and treatment yet to be discovered. The term maladaptive daydreaming was only coined in 2002 by Eli Somner, who is a clinical professor of psychology at the University of Haifa in Israel. And he actually coined the term maladaptive daydreamer. So this is a brand new study. And the greatest difference, Eli Somner says, is the maladaptive daydreams reported that the activity actually interfered with their daily normal life. So he describes maladaptive daydreaming as not normal in the sense that it's not conducive to any sort of productivity or creativity. So it's not actually helping you get anywhere, and it's actually sucking time out of your life. And before we go any further, it's important for us to note that this experience is very real for people, and it can be very, very disruptive, especially for those who are actually living with this phenomenon. So while there isn't a ton of scientific research or understanding about this topic, and it's not very common in mainstream media, much of the research we did was very much based on experiential information collected from those who are living or have lived with maladaptive daydreamings. So we have collected some information from YouTube videos. We've looked at some Reddit posts. We have looked at Dr. Sumner's research. And what we found is that maladaptive daydreamers can spend up to 4 hours a day dreaming. And if you think about that, 4 hours.
That's a lot.
Yes. And if you calculate that over time, it equates to days, weeks, or even years out of someone's life.
Yikes.
That's a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And for those maladaptive daydreamers, this form of dreaming is so rewarding and enticing that the dreamer simply wants to go back into their dreamscape and would rather fantasize at the expense of their own normal lives. Mm. It's wild. So the worlds that they come up with are super detailed.
Is this
They're
like
well
a,
thought out?
Is this like an actual mental health disorder? Or is this usually coupled with some sort of disorder or...
See, that's the really weird thing, is that it's not yet. There are linkages to some disorders, but the fact is that everybody is capable of this. So every single person on this planet is capable of daydreaming. Every single person is capable of going into maladaptive daydreams if their preference is to stay in their dreamscape. And we'll get into a little bit more of that, but it's something that is not comparative to mental health disorders. So that's the really interesting thing about this. Hmm. So according to our very good friends at Medical News Today.
Holla.
Hey, Medical News. Symptoms can include one or the following: highly vivid or immersive daydreams, abnormally long daydreams that are hard to escape, an inability to carry out daily tasks, daydreams that are triggered by external events or stimuli such as watching a movie or listening to music, sleep disruption and insomnia, repetitive and unconscious movements when daydreaming, such as rocking back and forth or twitching. There's also reports of mouthing the words. So for some maladaptive daydreamers, they're in their own world and they know that they're daydreaming, but they're actually mouthing conversations with their characters in their daydreams.
Wow.
So dreamers typically create elaborate, detailed fantasies or worlds in which they interact, and it's a fully involved fantasy daydream. The scenes and scenarios are detailed. So there's sights, locations, personal traits. Think of it as being in a fully 3D experience. As we talked about, those who suffer from maladaptive daydreams are aware that they are daydreaming in a world of fantasy, and they're still maintaining connection with the real world around them. And in extreme cases, extensive fantasy activity will actually replace human connection or interruption and disrupts work, school, and other life-related functions. And, you know, while the idea of an elaborate, fantastical daydream sounds like a really good time, So if you think about a world that you've created where there's everything that's ideal, all of the things are going your way, you have character traits that you don't have in normal life, everything is beautiful. What this translates into for many is that normal life is disrupted. So that could include low self-esteem, lack of confidence, social anxiety. These dreams will cause the desire to stay within the dream they created rather than reality. And in these realities, the dreamer may create something called a para or a parami, who is actually the dreamer. So you create your own character as yourself with different traits that you may or may not have in real life.
Wow.
So para is a prefix from the Greek word, which means at or to one side of, beside, side by side, or parabiloba, paragraph, parallel, paralysis. Beyond, past, by, it's a paradox. Mel is pod doc from the science. I'm going into a linguistic psychology now, I guess. That's going to be my pod doc-ness.
Perfect.
And the important paras to someone who's a maladaptive dreamer is to convey the alternative parallel life that some maladaptive dreamers live out in their fantasies. So the paras are usually created and they have a significant attachment to the dreamer. The word was created by maladaptive dreamers because the word character didn't accurately capture the emotional bond between the dreamer having for the characters. A para can be completely original, or it can be emulated from other sources, such as movie, books, media, TV shows, or really any other source. So there's three common factors for maladaptive dreamers. So they are difficulty in controlling the need or desire to engage in fantasizing, concern for the quantity of fantasizing, which interferes with actual relationships and endeavors, and intense shame and exhaustive efforts to keep this behavior hidden from others. So those are kind of the three themes that we saw when we were doing our research. So, you know, a number of people that we read about talking about maladaptive dreamers had those three key factors. So no control in whether or not they were going into a dream, they were ashamed of it, and it was impacting their day-to-day operations in normal life.
I would love to like see the studies on people that are maladaptive and like what their upbringing is like, or is this associated with a lot of trauma? Like, do most maladaptive dreamers have trauma? Like, it would be just really interesting to peel back the layers of this onion, which I had no idea existed until learning about it for this podcast.
Yeah. And on the flip side, there are people who are stuck in a maladaptive dream state where they are enlightened by wise people having the best conversations they've ever had. And it's a really positive, gratifying experience. So yes, dissociative elements for sure. But there are some people who are living in like the most positive maladaptive dreamscape.
So it'd just be interesting like to see those pockets of groups of like, who's loving? It's so like cosplay, but in your brain, like it's just, it's like you're entering another world.
Yeah.
And you don't have to like log on into a virtual computer.
Well, and I think like you were saying, Mel, like the whole brain has a built-in entertainment system. And I think like, this is just where your entertainment system might be short-circuiting a bit.
We just need to like return my PS5 now because like we have this for free. Like
no subscription needed, no money. And then, you know, for some maladaptive dreamers, the characters in the dream may offer inspiration or epiphanies or provide greater conversation than those the dreamer is actually having in real life. So it serves a purpose to shed some positivity for some folks. It has been viewed from the perspective of a behavioral addiction due to its initial rewarding nature, anticipation, and intense yearning to repeat the action. It's also got a frequent comorbidity with other behavioral addictions and such, you know, for example, problematic gaming. So I think there have been some examples where people are envisioning themselves as video game characters, and they put themselves into that dreamscape as well, where they're actually the character.
It's like me when there I was, pretend like I'm Black Widow.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, if I was a kid, I would pretend I was Kit Cloud Kicker from Tailspin because I liked his little airfoil that he could just jump out the plane and then just fly through it and be dragged by the plane. Like, that would be my...
I just go into the Marvel Universe.
I would be Penny from Inspector Gadget.
See, there you go.
All of the work and none of the credit.
Such is life. Can't even know. So there are a few videos of maladaptive daydreamers on YouTube that you can check out if you're interested. Again, some of the comic acknowledgements is that there is an interruption to day-to-day life. They're acknowledging that personal relationships are impacted. And in one in particular example, there was a concern of the dreamer's weight gain because they pace so much during their daydreams. It's actually their form of exercise. So they'll actually get their 10,000 steps in as they're doing their daydream. And they're worried if they stop, they'll gain weight because they're no longer as active physically.
There's a lot of dependency on this.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers.
There's a lot of layers, yeah.
And there's some very specific...
are unhealthy.
Yeah, and there's some very specific things, very specific ritualistic things about entering the daydream itself. So one person even describes their routine when they're preparing to enter into their dream. They need to be in a specific space. They need to be alone. So they describe a particular shame about the maladaptive daydreaming. So if their roommates or other people are home, they don't want to do it. They actually have to wait until their roommates are gone or they're asleep. And then they need to have the music on. It has to be a particular song, a particular genre. Right. They describe their need to pace back and forth. And it's different for everybody.
Yeah.
So another person described their experience as having very completely different conditions to trigger their maladaptive daydreaming. So if music is playing, they can't daydream at all. It's too distracting for them. They're prevented from entering into their daydream. This person described that while they would try to pay attention to conversations with their pals or their family, their mind immediately starts to wander back into their daydream after a few moments, even though the person they were conversing with would never know the difference. So they're having a full-on conscious conversation with you and this other person is away in their daydream and they would never know the difference. So again, we mentioned earlier on in the episode about what happens when you gap out during a long drive and wonder where the time or space is gone. Again, mind will exist in two places at once. And so I could be standing, have a completely normal conversation with you while you're off in a daydream and I would never know the difference because your conscious is split into two.
It's pretty wild. What we're going to talk about now is some research that the Royal We did with a collection of firsthand accounts of what it's like to experience this. I'm going to breeze through some of these. So someone said, you see everything, you hear everything, you talk to everything. It is literally as though you're going from this world and you're going into another and you're living in that world. Another individual has said, we don't necessarily want to live that way. It can be as crippling as any addiction because we cannot get away from it. But like any other drug, when controlled, it can be absolutely wonderful. So can you microdose maladaptive dreaming?
Put a timer on.
It can enrich and enhance our lives in ways others don't understand. For example, I can simulate myself without a partner and I don't just mean sexually. I can have a marvelous intellectual debate without having anyone else around to talk to. So that's where it gets into like the personality disorder kind of things for me. So another person said, hate that I do it and I love that I do it. So another person has said, there are interweaving storylines like a soap opera. My character grew up in real time and the world that I created existed in real time. So when I wasn't daydreaming, they would continue to live their life and I would have to catch up. I'd enter the dream thinking, what's been going on?
So this person is actually trying to catch up with the characters as that daydream continues. They come back to reality and then they need to go back in and catch up with their characters. Who's married to who? How is Sally doing? What was the book that you read?
Another individual says, more like reality TV, unedited. I used to try and catch up. I'd go, okay, what have they been doing? Did they ever finish this project? How old are the kids now? Did this character move away? One thing I dispute is the notion that the outer world is reality and the inner world is fantasy. When I'm daydreaming, I'm living and thinking and feeling. That's a reality. I've seen my characters grow, get married, have kids, and meet new people.
This kind of makes me think of like sort of like an alternate reality, or you think something into existence.
Yeah.
Maybe they are jumping. Maybe they're timeline jumpers.
Maybe.
Maybe they're jumping over into an alternate timeline.
Like a quantum scenario. I feel like someone needs to write a badass novel about this. It could get pretty cool. Someone says it gets in the way of my daily life. If I don't do it, I feel restless. Sometimes daydreams where I'm the victim at my funeral. I want to know who's going to shower me with love. Interesting.
In some cases, people are, you know, on their deathbed and they want to know which characters or who's going to come
showing
and
up. See them.
Yeah, and what they're going to say.
Don't we all? maladaptive dreaming has been the absolute worst that it's ever been. And when I'm saying that, I'm not exaggerating. Yeah, I'd just be really interested to learn about the voluntary or lack of control. And then like, how do you wean yourself from it? Can you wean yourself from it? Like anything else that you're addicted to?
And that would be so hard because it's not like you can just you know, you can prevent ways of getting a hold of, you know, substances.
Right.
Or things that you're addicted to, whereas this is...
I know. I guess maybe like some hypnosis therapy. I have no idea.
There, and like other disorders, mood disorders, you know, there are chemical combinations that may help with medication to regulate some of those behavioral issues.
Right.
Personality issues. There's nothing like that for this right now.
Yeah. It's so... I guess it's so new, right? So it's just like on the forefront of being studied and... analyze and collecting case studies. I mean, that's what takes some time to figure it out.
And a lot of people won't talk about it. A lot of people are so, like any kind of addictive personality behaviors, people are very ashamed about it. Can you imagine going home to your parents and saying, well, you know, for the last 10 years, I've been living as Rapunzel in my tower and I've been talking to my bunnies.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what would put you in the loony bin way back when.
Yeah.
So thank God, you know, there's still that negative stigma that is attached to the shame of it. And it's hopefully going away. But the last person that we've collected a quote from is, it's an addiction to fantasy. It comes in many forms. Some people daydream about celebrities, where others like me will base their fantasies almost exclusively on characters they create. They may be more visual, auditory, emotional, sensual, intellectual. They can create extensive fantasy worlds or individual daydreams. Some people have many worlds. Some have varying storylines. I think there's a spectrum of seriousness among those with the addiction. The one thing that seems to unify us all is the skill it takes to try and live in two worlds at the same time.
Wow.
So, before we get into some fun pop culture, just to recap, excessive daydreaming can be compared to an addiction. It often begins in childhood. Books, movies, music, video games, and other media may trigger daydreams, and they are often complex, elaborate, and portrayed like a movie or a novel. Repetitive movements may include pacing, rocking, spinning, shaking, something in their hand while daydreaming. Sometimes they talk, laugh, or cry, make facial expressions as they daydream. Sometimes that music is that key element to set the mood. So that kind of meditative ritualistic practice. People know the difference between daydreaming and reality and do not confuse the two, which makes them distinctly different from psychotics or schizophrenics, because they know what each reality is and the difference between it. It doesn't like mix into. Some will lie in bed for hours daydreaming or have difficulty going to sleep and have difficulty getting out of bed once awake. And they may also neglect basic functions such as regular meals. I was thinking about this, like, do they just check out and there's no daily, like, maintenance routine, eating, showering?
Well, think about it, like,
diapers.
Some people would rather their extra hour of sleep than putting their face on in the morning.
Well, it's true.
Right? So in this, like, some people might wish, I'd just rather skip my lunch and go into my daydream rather than eat anything, because it's so much nicer having a picnic lunch with my daydreams.
All right, so now we're going to move into a little bit of the pop culture side. And we're going to talk about The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Have you guys seen that?
Yes.
I still haven't.
Spoiler alert then, for those of you who haven't seen it. I would recommend it. It's a great movie. It's got Ben Stiller and Kirsten Wiig in it.
I heard it's amazing.
It is. It's fantastic.
So Walter Mitty, played by Ben Stiller, he is an employee at Life magazine and spends day after monotonous day developing photos for the publication. The theme of success and failure is examined through Mitty's inability to live a fulfilling external life, which causes him to retreat to an internal life full of images of conquest. Walter Mitty is neither exciting nor successful in his everyday life. In fact, the world Mitty lives in seems hellish to him, and to escape the tedium, he inhabits a world of exciting daydreams in which he is the undeniable hero. So, for example, while Walter goes about his typical and mundane day, he daydreams into a series of romantic fantasies. As he drives his car, he is commanding a Navy hydroplane through a terrible storm. When he rides past a hospital, he imagines he is a world-famous surgeon saving a VIP's life. And as he waits for his wife to finish at the hairdresser's, Walter sees pictures of a German plane and imagines he is a British pilot willing to sacrifice his life for his country. Lastly, as Mitty waits outside against a wall for his wife to buy something in a drugstore, he fantasizes that he is a bold and brave man about to be shot by a firing squad. So in the movie, Walter fancies a fellow employee named Cheryl, played by Kristen Wiig, and would love to date her, but he feels unworthy. Is he not married in this?
No, he is like kind of 40-year-old version.
Oh,
vibe.
I see. In his fantasy, in his daydream, he was waiting for his wife.
He doesn't actually have a wife.
He moves through all of this type of maladaptive daydreaming, and in every single scene for the first while of the movie, he is in a daydream, and he's having conversations with his coworkers, but he's also separated from his consciousness and in his daydream at the same time. And I think they do a really excellent job of portraying that in the movie. But certainly he is a maladaptive daydreamer, I think, from my viewpoint.
Wow.
Sounds like it.
Well, the movie depicts many of the elements that we have discussed already. So Walter daydreams for long periods, has trouble falling asleep, triggered by real life events, failing or neglecting to perform everyday tasks. He seems to be very attached to daydreaming to overcome traits or characteristics that he lacks. He has dreams where he's the hero and creates his own reality, i.e. rescuing an animal from a building that is exploding or engaging in conversations with the person he's fantasizing about. And at one point in the movie, you can observe Mitty mouthing the words to his own daydream as it progresses in his mind. So,
Walter.
There's a few ways that are suggested to get out of maladaptive daydreaming. And those suggestions are gratitude journaling, meditation, practicing mindfulness, which is the state in which one becomes aware of their physical environment within the present moment without taking action. So just being where you are in the moment and observing yourself without judgment or emotion. Another option is distracting yourself with other things, like binge watching something real good. Binge watch The Office.
That's an excellent option, yes.
Cognitive behavioral therapy and similar treatments to addictive behaviors, i.e. motivational interviewing, helping people resolve their desire to keep dreaming versus what they will stand to gain if they change their habits and have better control over it.
It's so interesting because we all are addicted to our escapisms, like whether it's reading a book or watching a show or playing a video game or going on social media.
Scrolling through Instagram.
We are constantly thirsting for certain outlets of distraction from our everyday world. And this is just like another one that, you know, I guess just comes with the package of a human being. Like you have it there at your disposal if you need it. If you're really in a bind and there's no Wi-Fi and there's no books.
Yeah.
Tap into your daydreaming.
Well, I also think like part of the conversation that Eli Somner or Dr. Somner was saying is that sometimes it can actually be a reward. So like if you get all of your tasks done, then sure, you can have an hour of daydreaming, go for it. But you have to actually ground yourself back into reality, like Walter Mitty was doing at the end of, towards the end of the movie, is just how do you get your connection back to the real world?
There was a lot of info in that episode.
It was definitely a little bit more science, well, not even science-y, but a lot more theory that we don't have a lot of information on. So our next dream topic will be a juicy, creepy one, likely, just to balance our, like we said, it's all about balance. But thank you for listening. And we would love to hear your dreamlike stories. And the screamier, the better.
Yes, please. please, please, please send us your stories. Don't be shy. You've heard all of our wacky, weird crap on these podcasts, so there's no shame at all of what you're dreaming about. And make sure you check us out on Apple, Spotify, Anchor, or any other podcast platforms, and rate and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And you can always find us on social media at Scream Dream Pod, and email us your stories at screamdreampod@gmail.com.
All right, and look out for episode 17 on June 10th, where we discuss a stream theme.
Ooh.